This is The Night Shift on Triple M. I'm Adam Shan, filling in for Luke Boner. We actually have the benefit of a US correspondent, for want of any other better term. He's my mate, Stefan Avalos. He's an independent filmmaker in Los Angeles, and he joins me now. G'day, Stefan.
Good day. How are you?
Good, thanks.
I like that, correspondent. I shall add that to my long list of hyphens.
And I hope you aren't too many whiskeys in tonight.
Yeah, you know, you got to do what you got to do. And yeah, I'm locked in here in self-isolation with a massive bar. So yeah, whiskey it is tonight.
Across the country in New York, catastrophe is taking place. Do you get a sense of that in Los Angeles? Is it, how much different is it where you are?
I think it's starting to hit everyone here now in a big way. My job, I tend to sort of live in isolation to a point anyway. But just hearing the overall quiet, and then driving past supermarkets and seeing the long lines of people, and you know, all the stuff that just feels so, you don't think it's going to happen in the year 2020 in the United States. And this is third world stuff. And here we've been almost instantly reduced right to the sort of basic essentials. It's frightening.
Yeah, it's the same here pretty much as it's playing out all over the world. Here we have a sense of a leadership that's sober and factual and not massively egotistical. You haven't got that, my friend, at least in the White House.
Yeah, what's that like? You know, we've been missing that for a while. I mean, what we've done here now is started listening to Cuomo and, you know, and his press conferences, the governor of New York. And we watch these, and I look at Susan, I'm like, oh, wow, a guy who I'm not on the edge of my seat hoping he's going to get through a sentence without, you know, a tremendous gas, in my opinion. The level of ineptitude in the United States in terms of our, you know, our executive branch is just, it's embarrassing. If I were to write this as a screenplay, it would get sent right back to me saying, you know, come on, you got to do something better than this. This is too on the nose.
So what are you hearing out of New York? It just sounds like you've got field hospitals in Central Park. It's got the greatest number of cases anywhere right now. People are dying in startling numbers. What's the latest there?
Yeah, there's the United States, and then there's New York, and we're all watching it in horror because, you know, I mean, anybody who does any traveling in the States has, of course, been to New York, and so you see all these familiar sites that are now converted into these sort of ghastly horror shows.
I think the underlying thing, you look at New York and you say, did they take it seriously?
I think that's a loaded question in a way, because I think that New York, being such an international city, got dealt a blow there that it would have been impossible for them to know just how serious it was going to be. They were, not to use the term lightly, but they were ground zero once again.
Yeah.
They had no way of knowing. That said, I think that everybody in New York jumped to action. Well, perhaps not the mayor, but the governor certainly. Everyone jumped into action as well as they could, given the information they had, given the lack of information, resources, and willpower that was coming from our federal government.
Yeah.
So this is really, well, quite literally armchair philosophizing on my part right now.
COVID-19 is the perfect international virus. It's got this amazing ability to transmit, you know, just through casual contact and so forth. So travelers bringing it around the world, it's not surprising. New York, such an international city, same as in Australia, because Sydney is our most international city, and that's where we have the most infections taking place. It's also the first place, and the rest of us are waiting for the wave to either crash over us or subside. But Sydney, as in New York, has copped that. But listen, back in Los Angeles, what's happening in Hollywood? Is it all quiet? There's nothing going on?
Yeah, we're at a standstill here. We're at an absolute standstill, and showrunners, producers, executives, and actually myself today, we were brainstorming on what are we going to do for product, because we like to take ourselves very seriously. You know, we like to think that we're important, but in a way, we kind of are, because everyone's stuck at home now and they're binging on television, and people are going to need this entertainment to stay sane, and so right now everyone's trying to figure out how can we get content out there in this world that has a completely new set of rules. We're talking about a project right now which involves comics around the country being able to send in material, you know, from their homes and then get it animated. So
interesting.
Trying to do what we can as fast and quickly as possible, because people are going to be needing it.
I think entertainment always, in times of stress and crisis comes to the fore, whether it's Bob Hope entertaining the troops or even making shows now, you know, this type of, it's always been such a staple. And you look at the changes that are possible out of this, people won't be going to cinemas for some time, which I guess plays into the growing dominance of Netflix and the other streaming services.
Yeah, I mean, basically any entertainment that involves a person actually leaving their couch, going out, getting into a car and driving somewhere has been on the downslide, has been really fighting for their lives. And so this is an additional blow being dealt that. I don't know how movie theaters will recover, because obviously they have a lot of overhead, and you know, they're barely making money right now as it is. Which a lot of people think that, you know, you hear these box office records of movies, you know, every year making billions of dollars. Most of that money's not going to the cinema. They make their money on popcorn and soda in the first 3 weeks, and so this is a hard knock they're being dealt. For the producers, you know, we're rethinking what we're going to do. Are we now going to push more for VOD and, you know, Netflix and Hulu and all these things we watch at home?
Now, you've got some product out there from your long career. I can't believe that you're actually younger than me, considering how much you've done and how you look, by the way, too. Sorry. tell us what of your product we can watch somewhere on the internet or a streaming service.
Two of the movies that I made, The Last Broadcast and Strad Style, are widely available all over the world.
Now, The Last Broadcast is something that Australians are well aware of. Just give us a quick précis of that.
Now, this goes back several years, to say the least. It was a movie that was about these four guys who go into the Pine Barrens of New Jersey, which is a very remote region, in search of the Jersey Devil, which is a legend, with television, you know, like video cameras and live casting, and they're going to do this live broadcast in the Pine Barrens to search for this legend, and they all die. They all are killed. One of them vanishes. Their body's never seen again. And then a year later, this mysterious footage is given to a documentary filmmaker, who then tries to figure out what actually happened out there. It was made in 1997, and it was a movie that preceded the Blair Witch Project, but it was the movie that really pushed the whole kind of fake documentary, the mock documentary, into the foreground, the found footage films. Yeah.
And you spared no expense. How much was the budget?
It was a big budget. I mean, we actually went over budget, because when we made this film, my partner and I, Lance Weiler and I, we said, let's make a movie for no money. See if we could do that, because there was all this new technology, computers that you could edit video footage and cameras. And we actually went over budget by $900. So the actual budget on that film was $900 initially.
And yet people are still watching it around the world today. I think it's probably the greatest grossing film of all time based on its budget.
Yeah, well, you know, for real. Actually, there was a point in time when it was in the top 10 most profitable movies ever made. Based on gross to box office budget.
Yeah. I must say, Adam, having seen The Last Broadcast, I mean, I was a teenager when it came out 20 years ago, it also has one of the great twists in cinema.
Yeah, don't spoil it.
No,
he wants to say...
No, know, no, I'm not going to give
Leroy,
it away.
By
I'm
the
just
way.
Saying, but if you like...
Your only fan in Australia.
I remember hiring it out at a video store. That's how bloody old it is.
Yeah, it was big on VHS, that's right. Yeah, you can get it on Amazon Prime, and, you know, you can watch it free there. And please do, because we do get a couple cents per view.
The other one, which I really enjoyed, which you forced me to watch, which I loved when I watched it, was Strad Style, your documentary. Your background, you were a violin prodigy, and you ceased at a certain point, but you still have an interest, obviously, in it. And you did a really charming story about a guy who starts from scratch to make a world-class violin, almost in the class of the Stradivarius. How did that come about?
Yeah, you know, it's a movie that when people initially hear, like, oh, it's a documentary about a violin maker, that sounds about as dull as it could possibly be.
Well, because the main character is such a charming, unusual, quirky person, and just getting him to this point, you go, like, how on earth is this guy in the backwoods who's never made anything, does he play the violin? I don't think he did. He decides he'll do this. So I guess it's an ode to the fact that people can do anything they want. And I guess that's one theme right now that I'd love to stress to people, is that coming out the back of this there are no givens. There are no constraints. People can do exactly what they feel they should do or can do.
Let me just back up for a second. Essentially, what the movie stressed out is this hillbilly out in the middle of nowhere who has this obsession with these fine violins, and he convinces this world-class violinist on the internet that he can make a copy of the greatest violin that ever existed in time for this enormous concert that has to occur. And so this impossible task is set in front of this guy. And we watch whether or not this can happen. So the movie is not so much about violins and the perfection of violins. He could have told a race car driver that he was going to make him an F5 race car in time for, Le Mans or whatever. It's about somebody trying to create an impossibly difficult thing for somebody who requires a machine that is perfect. And it is a barrel, a barrel of laughs. It is a good time to watch.
I think it is. Next time we talk, I'm going to set you a challenge. I want you to pull out your violin and play for us live next time, all the way from Los Angeles. Can we do that?
You know what? You're on.
Beautiful. That's great to hear. Thanks, Stefan.
Okay.
Talk to you soon.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That is Stefan Avalos, our US correspondent. Tell me, what are you watching out there at the moment? Can you make some recommendations? Everyone's working through their old CDs and DVDs and all the streaming services. What are the things to watch? Give us a call now, 133353. This is The Night Shift with Adam Shand on Triple M.